And the children can go to Children's Church. For the rest of us, if you'll turn in your Bibles to Luke chapter 12, I wanted to address something with you. I don't know if you've ever heard of the seven deadly sins. Has anyone heard of the seven deadly sins before? Seven deadly sins is not something that you find in the Bible. It's not like a Bible verse with seven deadly sins or anything. It's actually a tradition that comes from a number of church fathers. The first one that we know of that came up with the idea of the seven deadly sins was Ponticus, and he was alive in between 345 and 399 AD. He was one of the early church fathers. And then Pope Gregory I in 590 AD wrote quite a bit about it. And then the most modern version, well, not the most modern, but one of the people that was really influential and really pushed the seven deadly sins was Thomas Aquinas. And you probably heard of him. He lived in the 1225 to 1274 AD. Today, the Lutheran Church, the Anglican Church, and the Methodist Church all have the seven deadly sins in their doctrinal statements, like their creeds and things like that. And finally, the late, great Billy Graham talked a lot about the seven deadly sins. And so even though it's not Bible, there's these seven sins, and it's called a number of things. Some people, instead of calling it the seven deadly sins, call it the seven capital vices. Deadly sin sounds a little bit, it's got more punch to it, if you know what I'm talking about. Some people call it the seven cardinal sins, but in today's text, we're going to find one of those sins. So I'm going to give you kind of a summary of the seven deadly sins, and also the seven virtues that are the opposite of the seven deadly sins. The first one is lust, and lust means unbridled sexual desire. That's the deadly sin, is lust. The virtue is chastity. Okay. The second deadly sin is gluttony, which is an overconsumption to the point of waste, whether that's food or other things. The opposite of gluttony is temperance, being able to temper yourself and not overdo things. The third deadly sin is the one we're going to focus on today, is the sin of greed. That is the desire of material possession to the point of worship. So you want it so bad that it becomes an idol in your life. The opposite of greed is generosity. The fourth deadly sin is sloth, which basically means laziness or idleness. The opposite of being lazy or idle would be to be diligent with the things that God has given you. Wrath, it means anger or hatred. The opposite of wrath would be patience. The virtue that is opposite of wrath is being patient with people. The sixth deadly sin is envy. Now, some people get confused between greed and envy. They kind of seem like the same thing. Greed is this idea of wanting and wanting and wanting more. Envy is like greed in that you want more stuff, but it actually becomes something where if somebody else has something, you want to do them harm, or you don't think they deserve to have what they have. Okay? A good example of this is Cain and Abel, where God gave Abel a favorable pat on the back, if you will, for his sacrifice. And Cain was so envious of that reward that Abel got that he actually murdered his brother. Okay, the opposite of envy is gratitude. Okay, think about that for a second. The opposite of greed is generosity. The opposite of greed and getting things is to give things, but the opposite of envy is to be thankful for what God has given you. And then finally, the last and the most deadly of the sins, according to Thomas Aquinas, is the sin of pride. Now, we did talk about that the last time we gathered together. It's this dangerously corrupt selfishness. I want everything for myself. Of course, the opposite of pride would be humility. Okay, let's go to our text. If you remember the last time that that I was here and we gathered together, we looked at, we're kind of in the middle of a sermon. Remember, the Pharisees came to Jesus and he was giving the woes. Woe to you, you unwashed tombs. And he was saying, basically, the main thing that we looked at was this hypocrisy of people who say one thing but do something else. And one of the things that we touched on was this idea of worry and how we shouldn't worry because God's got the hairs on our head number. He's got these things that he knows about us that are almost ridiculous to know. You know, who cares how many hairs are on your head? As long as you got some, you know, people can be, I'm happy. As long as I have some, I'm happy. Okay. God knows the number of hairs on my head. Okay? He is concerned with even the things that don't really matter. Okay? And we were going through that. And then we talked about this idea of being put on trial and how when we're put on trial, the Holy Spirit is there to help us as we speak. And we define that as this is a call to not worry. That God has your back. Now, we're in the middle of that sermon, okay? But I want to mention something to you. Probably the thing that most people worry about more than anything else, if we were to rank these different things, one of the things that people worry about a lot is money issues. Money issues can be a big worry. Now, wouldn't it be great if there was a place in the Bible that talked about money issues and worry and how we can deal with that? That would be great, wouldn't it? And today we get to look at it. And so let's look in Luke chapter 12. We're starting in verse 13. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But he said, "Man, who appointed me a judge or arbitrator over you?" Now, we have this interesting situation. And the situation is someone has passed away, probably the father of a family. And one of the children, one of the kids, got an inheritance and the other one did not. Okay? And the one who did not, if you were in that circumstance, you would probably wish you had gotten some of the inheritance. Now, we don't know the circumstances. We don't know if the dad was just, you know, he wrote his will and forgot someone. Or maybe the guy who wasn't in the inheritance was taken out of the inheritance for a reason. Maybe he had done something. We don't know all the circumstances that go with this. But what we do know is that one of these guys didn't get an inheritance. And now he's going to Jesus as an authority, kind of like a judge. And he's kind of taking his brother to court in front of Jesus. Okay? Jesus' response to that is, "Who appointed me a judge or arbitrator over you?" In other words, this doesn't really have anything to do with me. I'm not going to tell. Maybe he didn't know all the circumstances. Maybe he did. Maybe he doesn't, you know, just go to the, if you have a legal issue, go to the legal authorities. Now, is Jesus going to be the judge over this man? Absolutely. He will be a judge, but not while he's on earth. He's going to be a judge in the resurrection, in heaven. Okay? In fact, we know from Scripture that God makes everything right. That He'll take all of the problems and all of the things that have been done to you that were negative or bad, and He will correct them. He will judge people for the sins that they've committed and for the good things that they've committed. Okay? But this circumstance does cause Jesus to do something. And the thing it's going to cause Jesus to do is to talk about the motivation behind this request. Okay? In other words, why is this guy trying to sue his brother? And Jesus is going to address that. Then he said to them, he first of all says, "I'm not going to deal with that. But let's deal with the root issue. Okay? A lot of times when we've got problems, we've got a root, we've got a shoot, and we've got fruit. Just like on an orange tree, right? You got a root, you got a shoot, and you got the fruit. The root of the issue is what Jesus is going to deal with. He is not going to deal with the fruit. The fruit here is this arbitration between these two brothers. Okay, the root of it we're going to see in verse 15. In verse 15, then he said to them, "Beware and be on guard against every form of greed. For not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions." Remember, the root of this whole issue is this man's greed. And whether it's the man who wants some money for an inheritance or the man who has the money and doesn't want to give it up, the issue here is going to be greed. It's this selfish, intense desire for this inheritance, right? And Jesus is going to say, I don't even actually see him accusing, do you? He doesn't say, well, you're just a greedy guy. He just says, hey, watch out, because greed can set itself up inside of your heart and take control of you. Okay? Now, most of us, if we're being honest and we search our hearts, we can say, man, I'm prone to this. I'm prone to greed. I'm prone to wanting more for myself. I'm prone to this type of thing. And so what Jesus is addressing here is important for all of us to look at. I know in my life, I can certainly point to things in my past and maybe even things now where I want more. You know, as a real estate agent, one of the things I deal with is helping people to put their house on the market and to price their house. And so we do what's called a CMA, a competitive market analysis. In other words, your house and its value is based upon what other houses that are similar to yours have sold for, right? Do you know that in Ocean View, the average home on the market is priced almost $100,000 more than an average home sells for? In other words, people price their house $100,000 more than what it's actually worth. Okay, you know what happens when you price your house $100,000 more than it's actually worth? It just sits on the market until you bring your price down. Where does that come from? It's greed. It's greed. Okay, now, there's nothing wrong with having money, but there is something wrong with when your money has you. Okay, now look at what Jesus says about money and possessions. He says, hey, look, in the end of verse 15, even when one has an abundance, it does not, I read that wrong, be aware and be on guard against every form of greed, for not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions. In other words, even the richest man in the world, who has all the money and all the things and all that stuff, that's not what his life is about. There's more to life than just your possessions, than just your money. And then he's going to give a little parable. A parable is an earthly story with a heavenly meaning, right? And he's going to make his point with this parable. Look at what it says in verse 16. And he told him a parable, saying, the land of a rich man was very productive. Whew, that's what you want when you're a farmer, right? Very productive land. And he began reasoning with himself, saying, what shall I do since I have no place to store my crops? Then he said, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many good things laid up for you, for years to come, take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. And God said to him, you fool, this very night your soul is required of you, and now who will own what you have prepared? Okay, so you get the story? This guy, and we're going to read between the lines a little bit. This guy has built his life around his stuff. In this case, his stuff is grain. Now, we're going to look at this a little bit more in depth. One of the main things, one of the main differences between us and the people in Jesus' day is we pretty much know where our meals are coming from. Probably not a lot of us have gone without meals unless we've chosen to go without meals. A lot of us have cupboards full of food. We've got refrigerators full of food. We've got more food than we know what to do with. A lot of us are dealing with overweight issues rather than starving to death. Okay? In Jesus' day, this idea of all this grain, this is like I don't have to work anymore. I've got enough grain in these barns. In fact, it is so good for me. I am making so much money here that my barns, you ever been on a farm before? Some of you have been on farms. How many barns are on the average farm? One. This guy doesn't have just one barn. He's not just double rich, he's triple rich. And these barns are overflowing, and he's like, man, I've got a problem. My problem is I just have too much money. I need to tear down these old small barns and build some great big ones, and then I'm going to celebrate. I'm just going to take it easy. My life is going to be good. I'll be set for the rest of my life. And God says, look, you've focused completely and entirely on the wealth and the possessions and those things. And don't you know that you're not even going to get to enjoy them? You are about to face eternity. Okay? In other words, you can't take it with you. If you've ever been to a funeral and followed the hearse to the graveyard, you'll probably remember that there wasn't a U-Haul behind the hearse. Because you don't take it with you. You don't take it with you. Okay? Now, there's nothing wrong with being wealthy. There's nothing wrong with having more than what you need. In fact, when you have more than what you need, more than your needs, there's three things that you can do with money. Okay? And there's three things that all of us should be doing with money at all times. Okay? Some of our money we need to enjoy. And this is beyond just paying for our bills. Some of our money we need to give. And some of our money we should be investing. Those are three things we should be doing with excess money in our life. Enjoying some of it, spending some of it through, enjoyment. We should be investing some of it, and we should be giving some of it. Okay? Now, before we can get to those three things, we need to get to some other things, right? Those other things are taking care of our needs. In Jesus' day, most people weren't doing one of those three things because all their money went to take care of their needs. Look at verse 21. This is after this little parable, and verse 21, so is the man who stores up treasures for himself and is not rich toward God. Here's a summary of the parable, right? You did all of this thing, all of this stuff, you spent all of your time, all of your energy trying to accumulate, and then you went to hell. You were thinking only of yourself, and you weren't thinking of what God wanted. You neglected the most important area of life, a personal relationship with God. Okay? Again, nothing wrong with having so much stuff that you got to tear down your barns and build bigger barns. Money is not a problem if you have money. Money becomes a problem when it has you. Okay? Look at verse 22. We're talking about the mega rich here. In these previous verses, in verse 22, we're going to get to the poor people. Okay? Look at what it says in verse 22. So he said to his disciples, for this reason I say to you, do not worry about your life as to what you will eat, nor to your body as to what you will put on. For life is more than food, and the body is more than clothing. Okay? Now, here we go. We've got this issue that is a major issue in the lives of people in America and all over the world, money problems. We only got so much money, and we've got these things that we need to have. Okay, now look at some of the things that's going on here. By the way, do you know that the number one reason for divorce is money issues? Money and worry go hand in hand. Money and worry go hand in hand. And so Jesus is going to address these issues. Now, look at what he's going to address. Again, in verse 22. Don't worry about what you're going to eat. And the second issue that he's going to deal with is what you're going to put on. So he's going to deal with food and water and clothing. Now, in Jesus' day, there was three basic things that people needed for life. Which, by the way, are three basic things that you and I need for life. Food and water, clothing, and shelter. And Jesus is going to take two of the three issues, in fact, probably the two most important issues, and say, you don't need to worry about that because God is going to take care of that. By the way, the third thing is shelter. In our today, in our world today, maybe we could add a fourth thing. That fourth thing is transportation. If you don't have transportation, it's hard to get to work, right? Okay. But the bus is transportation. And you can drive a 25-year-old car and you don't have to drive a brand new Mercedes, right? Same is true about your food. There's certain foods that maybe aren't glamorous, but will get you by. Same is true about clothing. As long as you got clothes on your back, right? Now, before we move on, I'd like to mention that this is not true about every place in the world. When Jill and I spent time in Africa, we saw people that didn't have clothing. Not because they didn't want clothing, but because they could not afford it. And we saw children that were starving to death, not because their parents didn't want to feed them, but their parents could not feed them. Okay? So even though it's a reality here, it's not a reality everywhere. And Jesus is going to say, to you people who are super poor, don't worry about that kind of stuff. Now that's kind of hard not to worry about, isn't it? If I don't know where I'm going to get my next meal. Look at what he says in verse 24. He's going to give us an example. By the way, what are the two things that we're talking about? We're talking about food. We're talking about clothing. The first example is going to relate to food. The second is going to relate to clothing. Okay? Isn't that very practical? Jesus is pretty practical, isn't he? Look at what it says. He says, consider the ravens, for they neither sow nor reap. They have no storeroom or barn, and yet God feeds them. How much more valuable are you than birds? Okay, now, let's dissect this a little bit and think about it a little bit. We've got birds. How does God feed birds? How does God feed birds? They don't plant stuff. Hide it away. They just go and gather it. God has provided an environment where birds can go and gather food. But I want to show you something. God does his part. His part is to provide the food for the bird to eat. But the bird also has a part as well, right? The bird has to go and gather. They have to be diligent and work. They have to do their part to be able to eat. Right? Now, the opposite, there's some ideas that some people have that, you know, no one should be hungry and no one should be, and if people aren't willing to get out and do something, we just need to feed them and take care of them and stuff like that. Remember the seven deadly sins? One of those was the sin of sloth or laziness. And what's the opposite of sloth or laziness? It's diligence. It's diligence. In order for the bird to feed itself, it must do some work. It must be diligent. Okay? Do you know that everything that you have and everything that I have and everything that we have as a society is a gift from God? All the clothes in your closet, no matter how many times you've wore them or whether they still have the tags on them, gift from God. The food that you eat, gift from God. The air that you breathe, gift from God. All of those things are a gift from God. And the great thing, that one of the great things that God has done is said, look, you have the ability to produce. You have the ability to produce. I will provide the rough supplies. You provide the work and the labor. And it'll all work out. Okay? Don't worry doesn't mean that I just sit around and don't do anything. What don't worry means is I don't need to fret about this stuff. God has got my back. If I do my part, He will do His part. Okay, look at verse 25. And which of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to his lifespan? And then you cannot even do even a very little thing. Why do you worry about other matters? In other words, Jesus is going to say, look, if you want to live a little bit longer, if you spend a lot of time worrying about not living longer, and that's not going to be helpful. You can't add 1 hour to your life. You know what's interesting is what we know today is that actually worry takes hours away from our life, right? It takes hours away from our life. It doesn't add hours to our life. The very thing we're trying to accomplish, actually, it's a downhill thing, right? And so Jesus is saying, part of our lives need to be to put our trust in God. That God has our back. Don't have to fret about the things that are coming up because God is in our past, He's in our present, and He's in our future. You know that's interesting about God? That you and I, we've got some limitations. One of our limitations is time and place. We can only be one place at one time. You know Jesus, God, doesn't deal with time and place issues? We got this big fancy world, omnipresent. You know what that means? Everywhere. That God is everywhere at all times. You know that God is also, he knows the future, He's in the future. You know that God's in the past? And that God's in the present? He doesn't have the limitations that you and I do. And so why, if He's got our back, why are we worried? Why are we worried about the future? Now, does that mean don't plan? No. But don't worry. There's a difference between planning and worrying, right? By the way, adults come up with a plan and execute. Children do what feels good. Adults come up with a plan and execute. And children do what feels good. Right? And the younger they are, the more they just do what they feel like doing. They just walk around and, step off the cliff because that looks cool. And they just toddle over there and get into trouble, right? Can I tell you one thing that really helps with money worries? Is a budget. A budget is a plan for your money. And when you can sit down, you know your income, you know your expenses, and you can come up with a way that you're planning you're going to spend your money before you actually spend it, that's called a budget. Okay? It's a plan. First you plan it, then you execute it. How do most married couples handle their money? It kind of comes in. Give it to their wife. That's the right answer. it comes in and they don't really talk about it. And she's spending stuff on this and he's spending stuff on that. And then it's like, well, we don't have enough money. And then there's an argument over what we spent the money on and all of these different, and there's this conflict and there's this contention and all of these problems arise. And it's the number one reason that couples split up. Okay. You know, a different way to do it is to sit down and to agree before we spend on what it's going to be spent on. Talk story together. And we go from fighting with one another to being unified together in the way that we do things. Look at verse 27. The first example that Jesus gives is the example of food. He's saying, look at the ravens. God feeds them. The second example, remember, he's already talked about food and clothing, and now he's going to give an example of clothing. Consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin, but I tell you, not even Solomon in all of his glory clothed himself like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which is alive today and tomorrow is thrown into the furnace, how much more will he clothe you, you men of little faith? Now, we have an example, right? The example is Solomon. Solomon, the richest, wisest person. He had the best clothes ever. And God is going to point to the flowers, the lilies, the grass of the field, and say, look, compare the lily to the way that Solomon was arrayed. And what you'll find out is that it's much more beautiful, the flowers are. And they're not even a big deal. They're here today and tomorrow they're gone. And God takes care of them. Now, what you might not know about Gary is that Gary takes pictures of flowers. And if you ever go to his house, he's got some beautiful pictures on his wall of pictures that he's taken. And they are beautiful. And you see what God has created and what God has done for grass. Isn't he a little bit more concerned about you than grass? And Jesus is saying, don't worry about that stuff. I know it's one of the three things that you need to just even survive. And if God takes care of the grass, he's going to take care of you. So don't worry about it. He's got your back. Look at verse 29. Going back to the eating thing, do not seek what you will eat or what you will drink, and do not keep worrying. For all these things the nations of the world eagerly seek, but your Father knows that you need these things. Look, he's saying, all the Gentiles, all the people who don't know God, they spend all their time worrying about what they're going to eat, what they're going to drink, how they're going to get by the next day, how they're going to survive. Don't worry about that. God knows. He cares. He provides. Don't act like people who don't know God. Act like people who have faith in a God who loves and cares for them. Okay, now again, doesn't mean we don't come up with a plan and execute. Doesn't mean that we don't use wisdom. It doesn't mean that we don't come up with a plan to get out of debt. What it means is that when we put our effort in those areas, God will bless that effort. Okay, look at verse 31. As opposed to worrying about our possessions and how we'll get things, we have verse 31, but seek his kingdom and these things will be added to you. The main point here is to make God your priority. You put God first. You put what he wants first. You put his desires first and everything else will just work out. That can be our problem, right? that we're so worried about all of these things and working all of these things out that we forget that God's there. And God says, hey, you put me first, you make me the priority, and I'll take care of the details. That might be hard for detailed people, right? Because we want to come up with the details, and when we don't want to come up with the details, we want to know all the details. And God's like, don't worry about it. Don't worry about the details. I got your back. Well, God, I need to know the details. Well, maybe faith like a child. When you have a good father and mother and children who live in a good family, they don't worry about their next meal. They just know there's going to be Cheerios there. Right? God says, you just got to treat me like I'm a good father, and I'll take care of it. Okay, look at verse 32. And do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has chosen gladly to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to charity, and make yourself money belts which do not wear out, an unfailing treasure in heaven where thief does not come near nor moth destroy. For where your treasure is, your heart will be also. He's going to say this. If there is a dragon of greed in your life, if it's all about you, if it's all about gathering into your barns and building bigger barns, and it's all about this stuff that you can do and making sure that I have what I deserve, the way you slay that dragon is by generosity. You give. You give. Do you remember that Christmas story about Ebenezer Scrooge and how he went, you know, even give the Crockett, enough coal to, you know, heat the place and warm his hands up. And he had all of this money, but he did not, he was stingy and he was greedy. He doesn't want his employees to be warm so he can have more money, right? And then he gets visited by the three different ghosts. And he sees the ghost of Christmas future where he's in the grave and there's nobody there. How does he change his greed? How does he deal with that in this story? By giving. He pays for little Timmy to have the operation he needs. He pays for more coal. He buys a Christmas goose. He does all of these things. He goes from being, this is all about me, to I need to bless people with what I have. He's gone from greed to generosity. The way that we deal with greed is by being generous. By giving. By the way, giving is a trait of godliness. We're created in God's image. When God came to earth in the form of Jesus, he gave. Servant leadership. The Bible, the most famous verse in all of the Bible, John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever who believe in him shall not perish, but will have everlasting life. You know what the crux of that verse is? God's love and his love being demonstrated by giving. Let me ask you a question. What type of person do you want to be around? Someone who's greedy or someone who's generous? Someone who they're kind of friends with you, but some of it's trying to get something out of you. And they just, everything's for themselves. Or you want to be around the guy or the girl who pays for lunch? Which type of person is more fun to be around? the generous person, right? Well, if that's what you want in other people, isn't that what we should do? Doesn't this kind of go back to last week? Hypocrisy? I want to be around people who are generous, but I don't want to be someone who's generous? I had a friend who wanted the newest video game system, and I don't exactly know which system it was. It was a number of years ago, so it was probably a Nintendo or something like that. And he had so much money in his budget, and he ate nothing but beans and rice for a month so he could afford a video game system. Okay. His whole life and what was important to him was reflected in what he spent his money on. He was willing to starve himself, literally, so that he could have what he wanted. You know how you can tell if you're a person of greed or a person of generosity? Just look at how you spend your money. Look at your checkbook, or maybe your debit card statement or your credit card statement. Where did your money go? You can tell if you're a person of generosity or a person of greed really practically by looking at it. You know, one of our core values is giving. To be generous like God. God gave His Son. God gives us all of our gifts. And we want to be generous like God, giving of our time, our talent, and our treasure for the glory of God. Will you bow your head and close your eyes with me?